a meditation, and then, as George said, I'll give a talk, some words, and then we can check in and have a discussion. And the theme being equanimity, I thought that besides the basic instructions, I wanted to share some practices that I find in the meditation support equanimity. So it'll be a bit more guiding than I'm usual. We'll have some spaces to really take in the reflection and intention. So I invite us all to come into the posture, whatever posture you're used to using in meditating, whether it's sitting on a chair or a cushion or a bench, or if your body needs to lie down or some other posture, then you take care of yourself that way. But have a sense of dignity to your posture, uprightness if you're sitting. I like Thich Nhat Hanh's suggestion of thinking of yourself like a mountain, strong, worthy of respect, here for any changes in the weather. And along with that upright alertness, a sense of ease and receptivity. So you might take some deeper breaths and breathe in a calming energy, and as you breathe out, just relax and let go. Let go of anything that you don't need. And invite any places of tension to soften. Then let your breath find its own natural rhythm. Let the breath breathe you. No needing to control or force. Let yourself be breathed. And the general mindfulness instructions are to be here with whatever your experience is in the moment. The breath or some anchor to the present moment is a place that you can return to whenever you're lost or scattered. Just sitting here and knowing you're breathing. Or for some, it might work better to just feel your body here sitting or feeling other sensations in the body, whatever. You probably know in your own meditation practice what works for you. We're just arriving here in the present moment without needing to push anything away. So whatever is in your experience is the next thing to meet with kindness and interest and a relaxed presence. What's happening right now? As I said, we'll be offering some instructions that support equanimity, And the first and perhaps the most important instruction is to just allow whatever is here to be here. If you find your mind wandering, no problem, no judgment, just notice that. Coming back in a very loving way. If you find that there are feelings that are arising for you, allow them to be here. And just know that this moment is like this, meeting whatever is here. With a welcoming acceptance, just seeing things as they are without any judgment or grasping or aversion, just allowing this moment to be as it is. If you notice any judgments or resistance to experience, allow that to be here too. Just noticing it with a kind awareness. Nothing left out. This too is part of the moment. Be with the reality of what's happening now without any judgment, meeting it with kind awareness. This is the first great support for equanimity, to see things as they really are. Then we can have a wise relationship with it. As we're with experience just as it is, I invite you to add another dimension, if you'd like, to support equanimity. And that is looking through the lens of impermanence. So as you're here, with your actual experience, experiment with noticing how moment to moment everything is changing. There's the in-breath turning to the out-breath. There's knowing the breath and then hearing a sound, and then noticing a thought, and then noticing the breath again, or noticing a sensation. You don't have to make anything happen. Just for a little while, tune into the arising and disappearing of experience, one moment after another. Check it out. Nothing you need to do to make anything happen. Just settle back and enjoy the show. Changing experience, one moment after another. nothing to hold on to, nothing that you need to push away. It's all changing by itself. Just relax and allow and tune into the changing experience. And now, if you'd like, you can add another element that supports equanimity. As you're noticing changing experience, you might tune into what the Buddha taught as the second foundation of mindfulness, that is the feeling tone of experience. Every moment, there is an experience of either pleasant or unpleasant or neutral, neither pleasant nor unpleasant. And the Buddha said, if you can notice this, if you can notice the pleasant without grasping or the unpleasant without pushing away, and you see how it's all changing, nothing to hold on to. So as you're tuning into this changing experience, you might experiment noticing, is this moment pleasant, unpleasant, neutral? And you might even play around with naming it. Oh. Pleasant, pleasant, neutral. Unpleasant, etc. And just try that on if you'd like. And if you're enjoying where you are, no need to force anything, but this is another great aid in developing equanimity, just to see how the feeling, tone, flavor experience is continually changing. Now, for the last supportive practice for equanimity, I'll share in the formal meditation is letting everything arise and pass in the field of awareness. So experiment with, rather than focusing on the objects of breath or sound or sensation, etc., relax and be the awareness in which everything is coming and going on its own. If this is a little obscure or hard to grasp, then don't hassle with it. Just be with your normal meditation. But if you'd like, you might just try and become aware of the awareness that is knowing it all. Don't try hard to catch it. Just relax and tune into the knowing of experience. And now for the last minutes of this practice, just relax and be with things however it's supportive for you, whether it's simply being with the breath or whatever your experience or any of these that you find supportive. Just know what's happening right now. And when the bell rings, notice the experience of hearing. And then let the transition coming out of the stillness to be gentle and mindful as you come out and come be with all of us. Okay. Hi. Come on back now. Here we are. Glad to see you're here. Well, I hope that was helpful, or at least interesting. No doing it right or wrong. Just wanted to share with you, for me, the different aspects of practice that we can do in a formal way when we sit. And each of these lenses to look through reality is a support for equanimity. So I wanted to go into a deeper kind of an exploration, both in our formal meditation and also applying it in our daily life. I've been teaching a lot about equanimity in the last few years, classes or day-longs or retreat focusing just on equanimity, because it seems such an important quality to cultivate. And the Buddha spoke very highly of equanimity. It is in many, many lists of his teachings. It's in the four Brahmaviharas, the four heart practices, is loving kindness and compassion and joy and equanimity. It's in the seven factors of enlightenment. It's in the 10 paramitas, 10 perfections. It's in the four different absorption states. It's in the progress of insight. And the unique thing about it is always the last in whatever list it's on. I can't think of any other quality that has that particular role. Mindfulness is usually the first, if it's in a list, but equanimity is like the culmination. It's a kind of maturation of practice, and it also holds everything before it. It is the precursor to awakening. It's just before one is having an awakening experience, there is a deep sense of balance in the mind out of which that awakening happens. And some definitions, equanimity is spoken of as a balance of mind in the face of change. There is a stability within the fluctuations of life. And I'll put a couple of words in the chat box. In fact, for now, let me just, I'm gonna just close the, I'll just do it, the chat box for me. So you can focus on this. So here's two Pali words, upekka, and a really long, maybe tongue twister, tatramajjatata. Try saying that five times. And these both refer to equanimity, upekka being that kind of stable, balanced, impartial mind in the midst of all the ups and downs. And the other one, tatramajjatata, means standing in the middle of things. They both refer to this quality of equanimity. And standing in the middle of things, you might think of as being centered in the midst of it all. Upekka has a quality of being balanced and having a capacity for being here for the highs and the lows as they come. Just for those who are interested in a little bit of Buddhist terminology or theory, the near enemy of upekka, of equanimity, is apathy or indifference. It looks like you're okay with everything, but you're really not connected with it. You know, whatever. That's not equanimity. 'Cause there's a connection and a caring with equanimity, and there's the balance, a spaciousness with it all. And the far enemy, each of these heart practices has a near enemy and a far enemy. The far enemy of equanimity is attachment or aversion. And there's a real power. There's a reason why it is the last in all of the lists. There's a tremendous power that comes from equanimity. It's not a bland quality of mind at all, because with equanimity, it can hold all of the other things, our caring, our fears, our desires, our intense emotions, and it also empowers all of the beautiful qualities, whether it's love or compassion. Equanimity has a kind of centeredness that allows all of the beautiful qualities to come into a deeper kind of fruition. And I will now share a screen to give you an image which probably many of you are quite familiar with, just to give the visual expression of equanimity. This is Kuan Yin, this beautiful statue, which is in Kansas City, a museum in Kansas City. Kuan Yin, the embodiment of compassion, and here she is, she's got one foot on the ground, ready to respond, and look at how relaxed she is. This is Kuan Yin, the embodiment of compassion, in her relaxed posture. And this is a representation of caring, compassion, held with equanimity. She's not fretting. She's not tearing her hair out. She's not saying, oh my God, what do I do now? She's coming from a place of deep balance. And that is probably one of the most important things we need to remember these days when we care about the world, when we want to process all the craziness that might be going on outside or maybe in your own life, to find a place of balance within it. And in fact, I just want to share with you another image that shows the power of being equanimous in the midst of intensity. And this is an expression of what Gandhi called satyagraha, or truth force, the force of standing in your truth when you're so connected in your truth that it doesn't matter what's going on around, you have a vibration and an energy and a field that is more powerful than everything around you. Gandhi had that when he almost single-handedly defeated the British Empire. Or Martin Luther King had that when he was brave enough and courageous enough to be facing incredible suffering and inspired others to do the same, and just meeting it all with love. And that came from that centeredness, that balance, that equanimity. And I want to show you another image that for me has been very inspiring, and it's of two people who, if you're old enough, if you live through the 60s or 70s and live through the craziness of the Vietnam War, then you know these figures, Daniel and Patricia Ellsberg, who were the whistleblowers for the Pentagon Papers when Daniel Ellsberg produced all of these lies. I think it was 7,000 pages or 5,000 pages of secret information that when it came out, it blew the whistle on everything that we were saying about Vietnam that wasn't true. And I have the good fortune, they live near me in Berkeley, and Dan passed away a few years ago. Patricia's still a good friend. And they were fugitives. Dan was a fugitive for a few months, and he was facing 119 years in prison, the most dangerous man in America, Richard Nixon called him. And then he finally came out, and he said, okay, here I am. And this is the moment that he came out and faced, you'll see, all of these journalists and photographers, and here Dan is with his wife, Patricia, and you can see just the banks of photographs and the crush of cameras and journalists, and look how he's standing in his truth, and here is Patricia, beatific, centered. This is the power of equanimity, knowing that you're standing in your truth, not afraid. I get very tender seeing this courageous moment. This is the embodiment of equanimity. This is the power of it. Let me get back here now. So our task in equanimity is to find a balance and a center and to let go of the control that we never had, to accept things as they are, and to respond wisely once we can accept what's here to the truth of what's happening. One of the key aspects of equanimity is a spaciousness of mind. There was a great Tibetan teacher who came to Spirit Rock, and he gave a talk to our big Monday night gathering years ago, and he said, I can sum up all of Dharma practice in two words. Everybody was very interested. Oh yeah, the whole thing in two words? Let's hear it. And he just said very gently and quietly, be spacious. Because in that being spacious, we can see things clearly and we have a perspective that can hold it all, where things are coming and going, and there is a centeredness in there, and we remember our perspective, we widen our perspective to open to both the sorrows and the joys. The key, the way I see Dharma practice, is moving from the states of confusion, what are called akusala, states of suffering, fear and anger and hatred and obsession and desire, they're all states of contraction, into states of expansion, love, compassion, generosity, clarity, peace. They're all what's called kusala, wholesome states. And so this is all about moving from that tightness of contraction to an openness that can hold it all. And that's what equanimity is about. So here are some supports as we practice this. And I led you through some of these in the meditation. The first is the basic instruction of mindfulness, to see things as they are, to see what's really here, what's really opening to the truth of reality. And in that seeing it without resisting it, we find a capacity to open and be with everything. That's where that first invitation that I offered to you, to just let whatever is happening in your experience be okay, whether it's a wandering mind or it's a hurt in the heart or a judgment about how you're doing or about how the world is or about feeling calm or knowing that there's a breath. Whatever is here, it's just what's here. And so the first step in mindfulness practice, which is really the essence of equanimity, is to be with things just as they are. And in fact, every moment that you are mindful, you are cultivating equanimity. You are not grasping at the pleasant or pushing away the unpleasant. You are simply being with things as they are. I asked my mindfulness teacher, Joseph Goldstein, many, many years ago when I first started this practice. I'd come from transcendental meditation. I'd done that for a few years. That had a mantra in it. And I went up to Joseph and I said, "Hey, is there a mantra in mindfulness practice in Vipassana?" And he thought for a moment and he said, "I can think of one mantra." I got really excited. Oh, great, I'm getting the mantra now. And he said, "Just keep in mind, it's okay. Let that be your mantra." Great, I got my mantra. It's been my mantra for the last 50 years, aspiring to it. Often I'm there, but sometimes I have to remind myself, it's okay. Not that, oh, this moment is fine or I like it, but this is the moment that there is. Now, rather than fighting it, how can I meet it wisely? Basic principle of practice is, it's not what's happening in the moment, it's what is my relationship to what's happening. And starting out with a wise relationship that says, okay, this is the way things are, or as Ajahn Sumedho, wonderful Theravadan monk, simply says, it's like this. This moment is like this. Then you can start to respond in a wise way. A good friend of ours who passed away a few years ago, a wonderful wisdom teacher, Terry Patton, had a terminal diagnosis on his 70th birthday, and he lived for another 7 months, and he gave a series of talks about mortality. And a week before he died, he gave his last talk. And this is all to many, he had many, many students. And I have this clip of, I have a whole talk, but there's a short clip of it where towards the end, somebody asks him, "Terry, are you scared? Are you angry? Is it confusing? What kind of feelings? You must have so many feelings there. How are you dealing with all of them?" And he said, "Yeah, those feelings arise. They're part of being human." But then he said something that I have kept in mind as much as I can these last few years that has stayed with me. He said, "Yes, I have all of those feelings. But I don't want to waste my time being in resistance to reality. Reality wins every time. And I am ennobled. There is grace in meeting reality in that way. I don't want to waste my time being in resistance to reality. Reality wins." So this is our first support for equanimity, to allow for it all, allow for all of our feelings, our fears, our pettiness, our judgment, whatever it is. Let me ask for you, what might be hard for you to accept these days about yourself? About others, about life. And imagine letting it be okay to be here and holding it with great compassion and wisdom. You might try that from time to time. See, what is it that is hard for me to accept right now? You know, probably the old adage, that which we resist persists. And when we can hold it with kindness, there's a kind of profound processing in the self-compassion program from Chris Germer and Kristen Neff. There's the saying, name it and you tame it, feel it and you heal it. It's the magic power of awareness to heal by just holding what's here with a kind awareness. So this is the first thing. Accepting things as they are. That doesn't mean not being engaged. No, we need engagement. But along with the equanimity, there is a commitment to do our part. You all probably know the Serenity Prayer. Grant me to change the things I can change, the courage to change the things I can change, the serenity to accept the things I can't change, and the wisdom to know the difference. If you can change something, go for it. And there's plenty that I am committed to doing what I can. But if I can't change it, then I first need to have the serenity to accept what I can't change and to work for change in a wise way rather than frustrating way. Second support for equanimity that we did in our meditation, and that is noticing how everything changes. This is a basic principle of reality in the Buddhist Pali. The word is anicca. And the Buddha said, if there's one thing to keep in mind, one thing to continually keep in mind, remember that everything changes. When you realize that, then you are not as apt to get stuck in fear that this will always be this way, and to feel that there's nothing you can do, or that we're all doomed. And also, when things are going swimmingly, remember, it all changes. It's going to change too. That's part of the dance of life. And so rather than trying to come to some imaginary magic place where we reach the heaven realm while here on the earth and stay there, we can be here for the ride. And remembering that everything changes is a tremendous support, because then we let go of thinking we know how this is going to work out. The pendulum swings, always does, always will. And one of my basic mottos, especially in the last, I'd say, 6 months, when I feel like going, oh my God, I can't believe today's news or whatever, is impermanence rules. Impermanence rules. And the pendulum swings. And here's the one other image that I want to show you, just to remind you. I'm sure you're very familiar with this image, but have it in your neural pathways. The yin-yang symbol. Out of darkness comes the light. Out of light comes the darkness. This is the curriculum that we're here on earth to, in this human form, to really get, to not fret in the middle of the darkness, to do what we can from courage and commitment, and to not rest in thinking, oh, it's all going to be okay. This is our task, to remember that everything changes. Just remembering that when you get caught in thinking, uh-oh, I know where this is heading. And that means to let go of your conclusions of thinking that you know how things are going to happen or what is going to happen. And with that, then you hold a positive vision that can allow for whatever is here, but you are focused on opening to it all. And I would say opening to it all with a heart full of gratitude. Starting with gratitude, then we can open to the changes. Okay, and I think for now we'll stop here. I've been talking for my half hour, and we have some time for questions, for Q&A, and George, maybe you can help us, and we can explore equanimity further, and then we'll have a closing dedication. So what comes up for you for that. And you can raise your, if you have the reactions box in the bottom of your screen and you want to hit the react and hit the raise hand button, then maybe we can be in dialogue in front of everyone and explore this further. So please, any comments, any questions? I've got a lot more to say, but we'll just leave it at that. Deborah, hi.
Hey, James, can you hear me?
I can. And now, George, can you spotlight us both?
And I think you are spotlighted, not?
No, I'm not spotlighted, and I'll spotlight Deborah too. No, I haven't been spotlighted. Or at least on mine spotlight. Let's see. So that's Deborah, and now we are. Hi, Deborah.
Hi, James. How are you? I remember your wonderful class a few years ago.
Thank you. Glad you enjoyed it.
I wanted to share with you some of the images I got because equanimity is so difficult for me to understand.
Mm.
And the way I got it, there's that movie Inside Out where there's the little emotions running around in kind of like the airplane crash sequence, running around like crazy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mindfulness seems to be like you can see the room of all your emotions.
Mm.
And equanimity is maybe 2 inches behind the room being, oh, okay, they have to go through this.
There you go.
I don't know.
Thanks.
That's another way to see it.
Oh, yeah. Inside Out was, and Inside Out 2, amazing. It put together by the advisors on Inside Out were Krista Neff. She was one of the four advisors from Self-Compassion. And Dacher Keltner, another Dharma friend from who runs the Greater Good Science Center. They were the consultants for Inside Out. Highly recommended. One of the best ways to understand the mind. So. Thanks, Deborah. Yeah.
Thank you.
And Peggy, hi.
Is that Penny or Peggy?
Oh, sorry, Penny. Yeah.
Yes, hi.
Penny.
Hi.
Hi,
Jane. Thank you so much for your teaching. It was very, very inspirational. My question to you is, can you speak a little bit about detachment in relation to equanimity?
Mm. Detachment in relation to equanimity. Yeah. As I said, equanimity is not indifference. Equanimity cares, but there's a kind of balance in it. So there is, rather than talking about it as detachment, you might think of it as non-attachment. So you're not grasping, you're caring, you're feeling that connection, and yet there's a kind of letting go of, as I said, the control that you never had. And that's a kind of wiser, that serenity prayer, like I said, the serenity to accept the things I can't change, but the courage to change the things I can. So you are caring, but not grasping. You are doing what you do and letting go of the outcome. That's where they come together for me. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Sure. And now, Susan, let's do you. And yeah.
Okay.
And, yeah, here we are.
Yeah.
Hi, Susan.
Hi, thank you. We were in Nanaimo a year ago now for New Year's.
Oh, nice. Hello.
Over New Year's, a bunch of my friends were all in this phase of the final chapter of life, recently retired. And we had a big discussion about the degree to which we just want to be in the world and enjoy the gorgeous world. Then most of us have done very committed things in our life, environmental, social, et cetera. And the degree to which we still feel like an obligation or commitment or a moral imperative to do something about everything that's going on in the world. I favor the former, but I have friends that like, no, we have to keep fighting the good fight. This equanimity, how does this weigh into this dilemma?
Well, the fighting the good fight, although it can be an inspiring phrase, can also seem exhausting too. So I am I'm one that also feels we're here to share our practice. If we've been so fortunate enough to be given tools to learn how to face life in a wise way, we have the medicine, and we want to share that with as many people as possible and inspire them. And the way that I see inspiration happens is by coming from love rather than anger or fear. So that to me is the key. That you do what you do, but you do it from love. And the more, sure, you hold your fear, you hold your outrage, and you hold them with that compassion that I spoke of before. But if we're frightened and others feel our anxiety and our fear, understandable that we have it, but if that's the place that our actions come from, they will have limited effect. Whereas if we come from a place of commitment, that's where I said before, let go of conclusions, of knowing how this is going to turn out. That's the whole point about about the pendulum swinging. And I'm doing my part because it feels good to do my part. Not because, oh, the sky is falling and it's up to me to save the world. But when we get inspired by people's like that Dan and Patricia Ellsberg, when you saw that picture, did it bring something up in you that said, yes, I want to be like that? That's how it works. We can, just like fear is contagious, so is love and courage and aligning with the truth. And to let go of thinking it's up to me to do it all, but it's up to me to do it, to do my part, and to do it from love, because that will be a whole lot more inviting and magnetizing and inspiring than coming from contraction and fear. So that's where they go together. That's how I
Thank
see
you.
it. Thank you. What else? Anybody else? Okay. Bartek. Hello.
Hi, James. Hi.
Hi.
It's good to see you back again. Hi.
Ah, good to see you too.
So thanks.
Were you in Turkey? Where did we meet?
I think last time Sunday Sangha as well we
Oh,
met.
okay.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, good to see you here again. Yeah.
Always. Right. So my question is regarding taking this off the cushion, the equanimity. So we have the first Brahmaviharas, their kind of friendliness, the compassion, the feeling the others, the pain and the appreciative joy. So they're kind of like easier to connect with, but equanimity, it feels like okay, things are just as they are, or it's like this, and then it's just letting go. Or how do we deepen, this equanimity so we can connect with others? Like you said, we don't stay indifferent, and how we can expand this practice on my daily life, like at work, for example, or being with friends, or doing anything, shopping, walking the dog. So what would you, James, say about, expanding the equanimity and deepening this into our daily life and
Yeah.
interacting?
Well, thank you for the question. And as
Thank
I
you.
said, equanimity goes with the other three Brahmaviharas. It keeps the loving kindness from turning into attachment, the pain of love instead of just a generative love. It holds compassion, the caring, and keeps it from going into overwhelm or grief or pity. And with joy, it keeps it from going spinning out into intoxication. So it is the hardest, probably, of, well, mudita sometimes is hard for people, but it is the one, the profound one that can hold them all, and it does take practice. And that's what I was trying to communicate when we were doing that. First, keep on remembering, as the Buddha said, everything changes. So he said, keep that as the one continual reflection. Whatever you're going through now, it's going to change. And so there's less of a tendency to grasp when the more you get that. And how bad it is, it's going to change. This will change. Everything changes. And that gives you a little bit more courage to be with things as they are. And then the second, which I said first, was it's like this. This moment is like this. It's really a practice in knowing, in mindfulness in action. Okay, what is happening now? Can I meet it with a kind awareness? And that's where why the Buddha said, in the opening lines of the Satipatthana Sutta, he said, there is one most direct way, sometimes it's translated, there is one most wonderful way to overcome sorrow and lamentation and pain, anxiety, and realize the highest happiness. And that is establishment of mindfulness. And so being mindful, that's simply knowing what is happening right now. And can I hold this with a very kind awareness? That is the most powerful way to cultivate equanimity. And when you get caught, which you will, and I've been doing this for many years, and I
I'm sure
get
I will.
caught, what's that?
I'm
What?
sure I will. Sorry. Yes.
Yeah, well,
Yeah, I'm sure
you
I
will
will.
until you're fully enlightened. Then even at the third stage of enlightenment, you get caught. But what happens over time, and what I've seen this in myself, you don't get caught for so long. I might have gotten lost for months or weeks in a particular hitting the replay button on, oh, this is so awful, or oh, I'm so depressed, or oh, and now that's not the way it is. It's like when I get caught, there's something in me after not too long that says, wait, there's another way. Oh, what's happening right now? Oh, getting caught, dear. Come on back. And so mindfulness and noticing and being with things as they are and practicing tuning into impermanence is the greatest way to practice equanimity. And the more you practice it on the cushion, the more you practice it opens up to your daily life. There are some other practices as well, like that pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, just seeing how quickly it changes. Or the big mind meditation where you're the awareness, right now. You might have 10 different things going on in your mind. Oh, I've got to do this. Oh, what if I don't do that? Oh, there's that. And just settle back and be the awareness that's seeing all of this stuff going in. And then there's also a formal equanimity meditation, which I didn't get to, but really is saying everyone has their own journey. including me. And may I have balance right now? You can look up equanimity. Sharon Salzberg's book, Loving Kindness, has it in there. There's going to be a book coming out in the spring. Margaret Cullen, a friend of ours, is writing a book on equanimity, and it's supposed to be really good. But you can practice that. I have talks on equanimity in Dharma Seed. There's many talks on equanimity, formal practicing, but those are the main ones: knowing things change, being with things as they are, and opening your wider perspective that allows it all to come and go.
That's a beautiful advice, James. Thank you. So one more thing. I heard this before. Someone said that equanimity should be actually the first Brahmavihara, so we can cultivate this stability of the heart. So that will guard all the others, right? Shouldn't be like first in line? Then
Well, if you can do it, that's great. And it's first and last. And that's where I say mindfulness does cultivate equanimity. But let go of the should, because in the should, then it's, oh, I'm not doing so well on my equanimity practice, so I might as well throw out everything else. No, you be right where you are, allow it to be how it is, and that's equanimity in itself. So
that's amazing. Thank you, James.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Bye bye.
All the best. All the best, James. Thanks.
Okay. So I see it's coming near the end. So George, did you want to say anything more, or do you want me to? I want to remind people about Donna. I guess that's the main thing that you'd like.
I'm happy for you to remind people about Donna. I've just posted the link and all the links, even for your website and also for the coupon, so people can enroll into your course.
Beautiful.
I know there was someone raising their hand to speak. I don't know if they still want to do, because we still have 3 minutes, if it's okay with
you. We have 3 minutes, but while we're seeing if anybody raises a hand, take a look at what George put into the chat box. So there's for the Awakening Joy course, and then there's Donna. So how do they give the Donna? Where's the Donna link? I don't see that.
Well, the Donna link is within all the information. You have the
there it is. Sangha Live donate. And that goes to both Sangha Live, and I get some of that as well.
Yeah, we everything that is shared until midnight today, whatever time zone you're in, is shared directly with James, and of course I don't know, James, if you have any donation link on your site, but feel free to also go there. It's
I can get that right now. Hold on. And here, these are, you can do PayPal, Venmo, or credit card. Hold on a second. Here's this. That's my Insight Berkeley website. Every Thursday, by the way, we give a talk online and live in Berkeley. And so there's the website for that, and for the donate. And yeah, your Donna is most appreciated. So do we have time for one more? I see it's...
If you have time, James, then...
I do, sure.
Okay, so Margot, please.
Margot, hi.
Hi, it's really short. Can you hear me?
Sure, I can.
I just wanted, if you know, if you're... If what you were teaching today is also part of your Awakening to Joy course, the Joy course will be all encompassing, including what we were learning today.
Yes, we definitely get to equanimity. I'll share a little bit about how it works. It's a 10-session course over 5 months, every other week, starting the end of January. They're all recorded. They're all, and you can watch live if you're in the, if you're up at that time. And we go through different, 10 different wholesome states from the Buddhist teachings, starting with intention and mindfulness and gratitude and opening to the hard stuff and integrity and letting go and loving ourselves and compassion and loving others and compassion and simply being, and equanimity, especially in those last steps. Equanimity is throughout, whether it's loving ourselves or loving others and on connection with compassion. So equanimity is a theme that goes through the last, particularly the last four of those, and I get into it in a more specific way.
That sounds wonderful. Thank you.
Great. Yeah, would love to share it with as many people as wanna share. And as I said, finances, no one is kept away because of finances. And we put people in groups too, if people want to join in groups or do it with a friend. It's a great thing. People do it with their parents or siblings or friends or kids or whatever, and in groups, and it works. So let's end with a dedication of merit, okay? Just feeling how blessed we are to spend a Sunday together, sharing the Dharma, deepening our capacity for love and wisdom and balance. And to take all the goodness, all the merit in our coming together, all of our blessings, and rolling into one big ball of merit, as Joanna Macy would say, and then sharing it, radiating it out for the benefit of all beings everywhere and this beautiful planet that we share. May all benefit from our work, our love, our caring. May all know highest happiness and peace.